This is Get Lit with Literature. This is Monk. And there's more at the website, allbook-books.com. Are we having fun, duh, drive yet? Yeah, last year's fun, duh, drive went over like a lead balloon, and I thought I would not do it anymore. But, yeah, you know, a year goes by, and artist's skin gets a little tougher, so here we are again, another year, another wild, intense year. The idea of the fun duh drive is to have some fun and ask you for some money. Basically, that's it. See, I don't mess around. I just tell you what's going on. I don't try to smooth talk it. This is freewheeling fun duh drive. Basically, yeah, I do this because I love doing it. And if you can throw a few dollars this way, the difference with this fun drive is that most fun drives will tell you what you get. But this fun drive will tell you what I get. And you get something too. But to make it funny or fun, duh. Okay, $5. If you give $5, I will get a cappuccino. And I can leave a tip for the young guy or girl. And, or, same $5 gets me a cup and a half of coffee. That's right, a cup and a half of coffee out at my favorite coffee place where I write and read and talk to people, and a little tip, not as much of a tip as the $5 for cappuccino. $10 gets me a big thing of coffee from Trader Joe's that I get anyway, so I usually get the Bolivian or the Sumatra or the Ethiopian shade grown. That's supposed to be good, but they're all organic, fair trade. $10 gets me the coffee. So, like, if you ever crunch the numbers, it is totally not worth it to go out for coffee, because I could spend in 3 visits to the coffee shop, I could have 3 cups of coffee, whereas at home for $10, for $10 out, I could have like, I don't know how many, I haven't counted, a lot more coffee than going out. But the thing about going out is get to talk to people, get to meet people. I get to go look at the water and the sky and the trees and the birds and you know, have interesting conversations and such like, get inspired, all that. So how do you put a number value on it? I think that's a big issue nowadays. So much number value on everything. Recently I got some coffee for a friend. I sent some coffee and it was like, well, I didn't need to do that, but man, it felt good. I'm always trying to be so efficient and frugal and manage, and this dollar goes here and this dollar goes here, and I was just like, wow, I'm gonna spend a few extra bucks, give the guy some coffee, and it like opened up. It opened up the energy. All right, now $10 also, okay, all right, $10 will get you a book, of course, a book. $10 will get you a book. Oh, I have to say that I prefer nowadays that you do checks, because PayPal, Venmo, I don't know about Venmo, but PayPal I use, and they take, not only do they take a chunk of any purchase, but also they have a new thing coming up this year. If you get more than $600 or more dollars, you have to declare some kind of numbered form for the tax purposes, which, okay, that's okay, but you have to give them your social security number, which to some people is business as usual. And if you're making way more than $600, you probably want to do it. But the thing is, PayPal has squelched and shut down people for doing things that they didn't like. So I personally do not feel comfortable or want to avoid, put it that way. If I have to do it, I'll do it. But I want to avoid giving PayPal my social security number. So that has me urging people to pay by check. A few people, if that's the only way you can do it, okay with the PayPal, but pay by check, avoid having to deal with PayPal business stuff, and they don't make as much money. I get more money from the $10 than they do. They get like a chunk of it. So, okay, that's my pitch there. So for $10, you get a book. I don't know, you could go on and choose the book. I'd like to promote my newest book, Moving Through the Empty Gate Forest, Inside Looking Out. It's a whirlwind tour of books and language and the printing press and trees and culture and distraction. That's the gist of it. If you're not thinking about land and water every day, every hour, every minute, you are distracted. The etymology of tract is tract of land or water. Dis is away from. So distract is away from land or water. Which reminds me, this holiday, I'm going to segue into the next bit. This holiday, it astounds me. I mean, if you're into Christmas, I grew up with Christmas. I loved it as a kid. Every kid loves Christmas, I guess. Great. If you're religious, wonderful. Enjoy, enjoy, enjoy. But don't be rude. I see people at the store running around to get their stuff, and they're rude, and they're like running around crazy so then they can go be nice. They got to get the stuff, and then they can go be nice and generous. Well, I say, be nice and generous while you're getting the stuff. But here's the thing. Hardly anybody says anything about the solstice, which is the simplest thing. I say it pretty much every year. It's the rebirth of the sun, S-U-N. The days get longer. So what has happened, and I touch on this in my book with some of the effect of Christianity on the world and on the texts and on the printing press and severely affecting the native peoples as the Bible came over to Turtle Island and has we're still reeling from the effects of that. How is it that Christmas is such a huge thing? I mean, that's the thing around the world. So many people, not everybody, but billions of people. How did that become the thing? Comes the worship of an individual, and meanwhile, the sun is overlooked. So I'm not trying to preach. I'm just saying, pay attention to the sun, S-U-N. That is the source of energy. Maybe Jesus Christ is your source of energy. I respect that. Anyway, don't get me wrong. As I've said before, many times I have a deep affinity for my experience with what I call, one phrase is Christos, or the inner Christ consciousness, which has nothing to do with the religious Christ. It's, you just think about the Christ they say. If there was, I've seen no proof of a physical being, Jesus Christ. But let's just presume, okay, the story is he was hanging out with the whores and the lepers and the poor people. And so he's open-hearted, generous. He overturned the tables of the moneylenders. Now that's something I can relate to. So anyway, something that all this reminded me of is the what's called original sin, which is just, God, that's got to be one of the most preposterous things I've ever heard. Like, my nephew and his wife had a baby. So now I'm a great uncle, and I got to hold my little great nephew, and wow, there's no sin there. There's not a bone in his body that would hurt anybody. I mean, you know, he might poop in his pants, but that's just part of the deal. But that little guy is like no sin going on there. And how you can look at a newborn baby and see a sin? But here's the thing. Here's my interpretation. No research for this. No book. No nothing. This is something I thought about, which I encourage people to do, which is what a lot of my writings encourage people to do, is not just go by the book. Books are nice, of course. I love books, but don't just go by the book. Think for yourself. So my interpretation of the original sin, if you think about it, which I thought about it, it has to do with karma. I think the church twisted it. Okay? So look at that little baby, beautiful, pure, innocent. Yeah, but anybody who's born has some karma. They got some work to do. They got some business to take care of. They got something that happened before. That is, if you believe in or are convinced with previous lifetimes, there's some reason. We ain't perfect, so even though there's no sin, we ain't perfect. So, wait a minute, you know. Last lifetime, I forgot to tip the waiter. Oh, I got to come back and tip the waiter this time. So, you know, born with some kind of karma. So that's my interpretation, which makes total sense to me. That it's not a bad thing. Maybe somebody did something horrible. In that case, if you phrase it as a sin and put it on the baby, that's misappropriating. But if you say, okay, beautiful baby, but last lifetime they were Hitler, they got some freaking work to do. So is that a sin? I don't think that's a sin. I just think that's part of this wild, crazy journey of life, which is learning who you are and what your experiences have been and how to improve, how to make up for your mistakes, how to make it good, yada yada, without waxing cliche. So let's see, what else can I say? $20, I haven't even thought about that. $20 will get me, boy, I might get a new pair of pants for $20. I like to shop discount. I go for the discount racks typically. Maybe a shirt. $20 will get me a shirt, and we'll get you two books. Okay, I want to read one of my guiding lights, Ray Bradbury, from his book Zen in the Art of Writing, Releasing the Creative Genius Within You. Zest, gusto. How rarely one hears these words used. How rarely do we see people living, or for that matter, creating by them. Yet if I were asked to name the most important items in a writer's makeup, the things that shape his material and rush him along the road to where he wants to go, I could only warn him to look to his zest, see to his gusto. Now he does. He mentioned, I'm going to read from Dylan Thomas. He mentions Dylan Thomas in here. And as I said last time, Ray said, if you're not having fun writing, go out and pick peaches. Go out and do something else. So that is why he's one of my guiding lights, because he helped to make it fun. And I cannot count the hours of that. Yes, it's work. It's a lot of work. Believe me, as I say, if I was a better writer, I would not spend so much time editing. But that's the deal. And so it is work, but to make it fun is the thing. So speaking of Christmas, whatever your religious persuasion or non-religious persuasion, one of the greatest, I think, perhaps the greatest child literature is Dylan Thomas, A Child's Christmas in Wales. It's like a story poem, and it's just, okay, I want to read it. Not only is, I just think it's beautiful, but it is a lesson in writing. I love hyphens. It's got lots of hyphens. I love hyphenated words, and he loves them too. And just, you listen to the, if you listen to the sound and the rhythm and the flow and the assonance, the consonants, the alliteration, everything, that to me is a guiding light. Too much writing nowadays, and especially poetry, in my humble opinion. And Lawrence Ferlinghetti agreed with me. I agree with him when he said poetry is written like prose nowadays, much of it. So okay, I'm going to read the first couple of stanzas or so. A Child's Christmas in Wales. One Christmas was so much like another in those years around the sea town corner now and out of all sound, except the distant speaking of the voices I sometimes hear a moment before sleep, that I can never remember whether it snowed for 6 days and 6 nights when I was 12, or whether it snowed for 12 days and 12 nights when I was 6. All the Christmases rolled down toward the two-tongued sea, like a cold and headlong moon bundling down the sky that was our street. And they stop at the rim of the ice-edged, fish-freezing waves, and I plunge my hands in the snow and bring out whatever I can find. In goes my hand into that wool-white, bell-tongued ball of holidays, resting at the rim of the carol-singing sea, and out comes Mrs. Prothero and the firemen. It was on the afternoon of the Christmas Eve, and I was in Mrs. Prothero's garden waiting for cats with her son, Jim. It was snowing. It was always snowing at Christmas. December, in my memory, is white as Lapland, though there were no reindeers. But there were cats, patient, cold, and callous, our hands wrapped in socks. We waited to snowball the cats. So a couple of comments on that. I love the snow. I can't remember whether it snowed for 6 days and 6 nights when I was 12, or it snowed for 12 days and 12 nights when I was 6. Because that's, not only is that just interesting, it's a sense of memory, and also that place before going to sleep, that creative place where ideas come in, and the sort of boundaries of the physical material world and the ethereal spiritual world start to get, the boundary becomes unclear. And just the sound, all the Christmases roll down toward the two-tongued sea like a cold and headlong moon bundling down the sky that was our street. Now what a, he brings the moon and the sky right to the street, and I can see the whole, I can see that little quaint village with the moon and the sky and the street. So that is, that to me is poetry. Cold and headlong moon bundling down the sky that was our street. That's as above, below, as above, so below in poetry. And then he makes it very visceral. They stop at the rim of the ice edge, fish freezing waves, and I plunge. That word plunge just does it. Plunge my hands in the snow and bring out whatever I can find. It's like, he's just reaching in and he's going to pull out all these images and he's going to fling it at you. So for conveying the feel of the holiday and the joy of the presents, not the commercialism, the relatives, the aunts and the uncles falling asleep after having a meal and drinking, and all the different presents, jelly babies, a folded flag, a false nose, a tram conductor's cap, and a machine that punched tickets and rang a bell, never a catapult, once by mistake that no one could explain, a little hatchet, and a celluloid duck that made, when you pressed it, a most unduck-like sound. Were there uncles like in our house? There are always uncles at Christmas, the same uncles, and on Christmas morning with dog disturbing whistle, and on it goes. And I'll give a spoiler alert towards the end. Always on Christmas night there was music, and uncle played the fiddle. A cousin sang Cherry Ripe, and another uncle sang Drake's Drum. It was very warm in the little house. Auntie Hannah, who had got on to the parsnip wine, sang a song about bleeding hearts and death, and then in another which she said her heart was like a bird's nest, and then everybody laughed. And then everybody laughed again, and then I went to bed, looking through my bedroom window out into the moonlight and the unending smoke-colored snow. I could see the lights in the windows of all the other houses on our hill and hear the music rising from them up the long, steady, falling night. I turned the gas down. I got into bed. I said some words to the close and holy darkness. And then I slept. Yes, a beautiful poem, Child's Christmas in Wales by Dylan Thomas. And beautiful literature, excellent writing. That you could, I think you could study that. I think for writing poetry, you could study that, read that every week for a month, and I think you would become a decent poet if you studied that. Not copy him, but, you know, get the rhythm and the flow and the imagery and all that. So again, I hope you had some fun listening to me and listening to this, and we will continue forward, and if you feel like it, if you can, buy check or money order, or if you have to, PayPal, $5 or $10 or $20 or whatever amount. If you want to send a dollar, I'll gladly receive a dollar. But don't PayPal a dollar, because I think PayPal would take like 34 cents. So that's kind of a waste of time. But anyway, and if you don't send anything, I forgive you. But thanks for listening and be well.